Make a difference. Relish a great work-life balance. Enjoy generous benefits and competitive pay. Go home each night feeling fulfilled by your work. Work for an employer of choice. Work for Blue Ridge Hospice. We're always looking to hire compassionate RNs, CNAs, or anyone interested in office or thrift shop work. We've been your not-for-profit community hospice since 1981. Visit our website for more information or to apply today at blueridgehospice.org. That's blueridgehospice.org. Blue Ridge Hospice is an equal opportunity employer.
Idea Pro Studios.
Hi, I'm Emma.
I'm Joe.
I'm Koshi.
I'm Nairi.
And welcome to our podcast, Fashion Not All As It Seems.
Hello and welcome to Fashion Not All As It Seems, the podcast that aims to have fun, meaningful conversations, spark lively debates, and challenge the way we approach and consider the fashion industry. I'm Joanna, and I'm your host today, and I'm joined by three other brilliant women and experts within their fields.
Hi, I'm Emma, and I'm founder of Eloma, a company dedicated to artisan and ethical production for a fairer and more equitable fashion industry.
Hello, I'm Koshi, owner of a small research textile studio where we develop new materials and concentrate on woven fabrics.
Good morning, and my name is Nairi. I work within the traceability, transparency aspect of textiles and connecting designers with quality producers, as well as producers who want to work with honest designers.
Our guests are diverse global change makers who are reframing the nature of the industry and advocate for positive social and environmental impact. Today, we are delighted to welcome Emma Carr, who's Commercial Director of NEEK. And I'm so excited about this conversation. Thank you so much, Emma, for being our guest. I wonder if we could just start by you introducing yourself and some of your background and tell us also a bit more about NEEK.
Thank you, everybody, for having me today. As Jo said, my name's Emma and I'm based in Melbourne, Australia. I've worked in the garment industry my whole career and most recently at NEEK. So I've been at NEEK about 3 or 4 years now. And prior to that, was based in Hong Kong, working in a buying and sourcing office for close to 15 years. So spent a lot of time in China and other countries in Asia, sourcing garments and buying garments and working with the suppliers there.
Emma, we've known each other a long time now, about over 10 years, I think. So I just kind of wanted to delve more into your experience kind of working in Asia. You must have seen so much change during that time, especially with the suppliers. I wonder if you can kind of just talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, things as they do and have done in China move so quickly. You know, I remember flying into China the very first time and just landing on the in a small plane, landing on the tarmac and walking towards a hut to get my visa. You know, and nowadays you fly in when we're allowed and, you know, into these huge global airports and, you know, whisked away in cars to go wherever you want and wherever you need to go. So that sort of thing has come such a long way. And I think, you know, the suppliers and the factories also learnt very quickly how to work with their counterparts all over the world and got their manufacturing up to, you know, a level, an incredible level, honestly, and could make anything as well as anybody else.
Definitely. I think the speed of change, especially in China, was so immense. You know, it literally kind of changed before your eyes. And could you tell us more about NEEK and, you know, how you came to be in the position?
Yeah, so NEEK is a brand that's been in Australia for close to 15 years now. I've been there for the last 4 years. Our creative director, Nadia, who I know, Joe, you know as well, quite well, came to work for NEEK. And then I was still living in Hong Kong at that stage and we were coming home for family reasons, to be closer to family. And then she said to me, oh, I've got something that might interest you. And from that point, I was literally hooked. So came on board with Neek, and you know, now I look after everything from buying and planning, the sustainability side, warehousing, retail, and a whole host of things. And Nadia is my counterpart and looks after the creative side, so all of design and marketing, e-com, social and digital. There's obviously a lot of overlap, so we work really closely together. She's based in Sydney while I'm in Melbourne. So, but, you know, we worked together for a long time previously, and now we're using that relationship, I suppose, to work together from separate cities. Neek is a brand, a minimalist fashion brand. We have both men's and women's wear. We have six stores. We just opened our sixth store in Paddington in New South Wales, which is really exciting, and a really strong online business, both our own online store, but also through The Iconic. And our product is sustainability is really part of our DNA. We're known for that element in our brand and using a lot of natural fibres. And really, since coming on board with Neek and prior to COVID, that feeling of responsibility has always been strong within the brand. And it's just been putting together a strategy that worked for our brand and taking it, you know, taking those next steps. And I suppose constantly looking at what we can do, how we can improve within the realms of Neek.
Definitely. And I think what's interesting when I look on your website is you talk so much about responsibility. You know, I think a lot of brands, they focus on big sustainable statements. But really, when I look at what you're doing, I'm so interested in it because it does feel that it's very much led from the heart. And, you know, you and Nadia really feel a responsibility to doing good within the brand. And I think that comes from really strong leadership. You know, I was really lucky to work with you both for some years. And, you know, do you think there's something within you both that really kind of motivates you and pushes you forward to kind of integrate sustainability into this brand?
I think, you know, we often talk about, you know, what does sustainability mean? And I think everyone has such a different answer to that. And, you know, for us as a brand at Neek, we really wanted to not do any harm to the planet or our people. And there's, I mean, it's such a diverse area. It's really hard to sort of capitalize in one way. But I also sort of feel that both of us becoming mothers as such, you think about more, you know, your output to the planet and to the people and your responsibility to those that you look after and what you're going to leave them. So there's that sort of that element as well to, you know, that I think for both of us, we see it as something really important for us both.
Definitely. And I just want to touch on that point. You know, you are both mothers and, you know, you are managing this business from two different cities. You know, you've not, I'm guessing, been able to see each other very much. In terms of that as a dynamic, how does it work? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people who really want to move towards that way of working. So how do you two make it work?
Well, I think for us, it's the strength of our relationship and the trust that we have in each other. It's the trust that we both know what we're doing and we're both going to do what, you know, each other's supposed to do, but also the trust that we've got each other's back. So, you know, that sort of works both ways. And because we, you know, we've worked together before and we've built those relationships and built that trust, I think for us working together, you know, that comes quite naturally.
And I think that's so good and refreshing to hear in the industry, you know, that idea of collaboration and really that supportive network and leadership, because we don't always see that in the fashion industry. I kind of wanted to move now to a big topic that we've had recently in the UK, Black Friday. And I know you've been doing some really interesting initiatives around Black Friday. So could you tell us more?
Yeah, so for the third year running, we've done what we call Black Friday in collaboration with Black Friday. The proposition there is that people are able to return their garments to us or to directly to Black Friday and have them over-dyed black. So these might be, you know, pre-loved pretty loved garments that perhaps worn out or faded, or maybe they once were black and, you know, they're now slightly grayed. So you're able to return them and get them dyed black and, you know, have them as new, essentially. So it's I suppose, the antithesis almost of Black Friday is, you know, not buying something new. Instead, you're finding a new love for that item that you had in your wardrobe. And it's, you know, it's been for us very successful. The customers love it. They love hearing about it. We just think it's a really good thing to do.
Definitely. I love it. I think it's a fantastic initiative. How did it come about? Because in some ways, it's such an unusual thing to do. And I think brands have felt so much pressure, you know, to use Black Friday as a big kind of sales vehicle. How did you kind of start this as an idea? And how did you get the collaborators on board?
Yeah, so we actually, the collaboration came from another brand that we work with quite a lot called Citizen Wolf. It's their initiative, I suppose, but and they've called on brands each year to support. This year, we were the only brand with retail stores, so people could bring their products into our stores. And I think it's just, you know, growing that awareness within, you know, the community. People can return, send in their garments from anywhere, essentially, and have them dyed. Which is great. And I think it just felt like, you know, like I said before, it felt like the right thing to do. There is a lot of pressure to discount and to make the most, I suppose, of those promotional times. But for us, you know, I'm not saying we don't do promotions and that sort of thing. We certainly do. But I think in this particular case, it just was so right for us.
You know, that is just one of your initiatives. And, you know, you do so much in terms of thinking about your product in a circular way. And I wanted to look a little bit more into some of those. So you have Reneke.
Yeah, so Reneke is our circularity initiative. And this covers quite a broad spectrum. When we look at the waste pyramid as such, you know, and talk about the best way that people can get longevity out of their garments and avoid waste by not buying something new. This is where this program really comes into it. So any items that are damaged in our processes, whether it's handling or in the stores, or, you know, when customers have them, if they need repairs of any sort. Alongside that, we also invite customers to bring in their pre-loved garments and return them to us. And then we take all those garments, they go back into the warehouse and we sort through them. And we look at how we can use them again and get another life out of them. So some of them are as simple as just being cleaned and then they go can go back out to store. Some of them get repaired. We use a not-for-profit social enterprise called Second Stitch who do all our repairs. You know, that's just another really nice organisation that we work with. They support immigrants and refugees here in Melbourne. We also overdye, so similar to Black Friday, we overdye those garments that might have stains or that sort of thing. And then I suppose the more exciting part of that is looking at the styles that we can upcycle. We work with a couple of designers here in Melbourne who have that passion themselves of upcycling garments, and also our design team in Sydney. They just recently launched a more avant-garde collection, which is all the samples from their processes that are no longer required have now been upcycled into these amazing new, really quite special one-off pieces as well. And once all that's done, the product is then put into store, and we've had a really amazing reaction. You know, and our hope is that this will continue to grow, that the customers will continue to bring back their pre-loved items, and, you know, that circularity will continue on and on and on. People who come into store, opposed to buying new items, they can buy these either upcycled or recycled items in store. You know, it's such a big trend now, and, you know, we really see that as becoming almost quite the norm going forward.
And I'm sure many brand owners will be listening to this really kind of seeing you as a role model in terms of what they would want to implement within their business. And, you know, I'm sure there's been challenges to doing that. And it's, I imagine, involved quite a lot of like logistical infrastructure, making collaborations. You know, how has that process gone for you? Was it iterative and then you had to kind of start small and then build on that? Or did you find when you started to do it, actually lots of people came and kind of said, I want to support you with this? What advice could you give to other brands who wanted to implement something similar?
I would say you need to find what works for you, what works for your brand, what suits your brand as well. It's certainly challenging. I think it's quite labor intensive, you know, with the sorting of all the garments, you know, our store staff returning them to us and then going out to whether it's the designers or the other places that we work with to be repaired. You know, the whole process is quite labor intensive. And, you know, that costs money. And in some cases, you know, the garments cost more than perhaps they would have when they were in store originally the first time, particularly if they've been upcycled. You know, we're working with local artisans, essentially, who are upcycling the garments and putting their hours and effort in to do that. But I think the results really speak for themselves. Those pieces that are more special go into store at a higher price point, and, you know, they sell and the customers love them and they feel like they're buying something special and something unique as part of that. So, you know, I think that's what works for us and for Nique as a brand. We're able to do that. And I think each brand is going to have their own unique point of view of what they can do and who they work with and that sort of thing. But sort of going back to your point, Joe, there was some trial and error in the beginning, you know, just to find the right people who understood us as a brand and had the resources and capabilities as well to work with us.
I mean, I just look at what you do and, you know, I'm in awe of it. And I think you have kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of some of these initiatives can have a cost to them. And I think that is what puts brands off sometimes from starting. But, you know, I think it's because you built such a good base that customers really do trust what you're doing and they're willing to pay more for it. But, you know, I think it's also that time investment, like you said, you know, it's really having a bigger goal in terms of how you lead a business and having that integrity that, in my view, makes a lot of these initiatives run their course. Do you see that as well? You know, that it's very much, again, around your and Nadia's beliefs that this is just part of the brand's DNA. It's non-negotiable. This is how it has to be.
Yeah, I think we really believe in what we're doing, but also we really want to show other people that it is possible to, I suppose, take responsibility for our garments, not only, you know, to the point where we sell them, but also, you know, to the point where our customers, you know, finish using them for whatever purpose and then to be able to bring them back. I think there's lots of, you know, there's so much we could do and such a range of possibilities. You know, it was really just narrowing it down to what worked for us and what we can do with the resources we have. But, you know, it is our passion and we really wanted to make it work. So it was putting the effort in to make it happen.
Brilliant. I want to talk also about some other initiatives that you got, because you also do rental.
Yeah, so we've just had our first month of rental. We partnered with another company called Renter. They are new into the market. We're one of the first brands on board with them, and they really come from a circularity angle as well, in regards to getting multiple wears out of your items. You know, not buying something and just wearing it for a short period of time, and then, you know, not it goes into your wardrobe and not seeing it again. So their platform allows us to have a rental button on our website for a collection of clothes. So you can purchase a collection of neat clothes, sort of 5 or 6 coordinating pieces, and you can have those for anywhere from 4 days to a month or longer, and also have the option to buy them at the end if you love them that much, and you want to keep them for longer. So that's really exciting as well. That's had a fantastic reaction. And, you know, we've really only just started in that space to explore that, and for our customers to explore that, because, you know, it's quite a cost effective way to try a new collection, and you can do that every month and have a new wardrobe and still have that buzz of having bought something new, rented something new. So yeah, it's a really exciting time for rental and for us with Neek trying that now as well.
Definitely. You know, I think the rental and resale models will be the ones which have the most growth, you know, the next few years. And, you know, I think definitely for me, I love the idea of rental, you know, the fact that clothes don't have to sit in my wardrobe for years, you know, and I can get something new, you know, every couple of weeks. You're also doing unisex, and I've heard that this has been quite successful as well.
Yeah, so a unisex was probably our first initiative amongst all of these. It's been in our range since 2019, and the range has grown. It started, I think, as about 15 pieces and is now close to 30 pieces a season, and sales have grown. I think in the last year they've grown about 33%. So, you know, obviously as we get better and better at doing unisex and our customers more aware, also, and I think it brings in a new customer also who's wanting that sort of more, I suppose, gender fluid dressing, whether it's women looking for something more, slightly more masculine, or men who come in and like the fit on a women's trouser, etc. So, you know, and that was really driven by our customers, you know, seeing who our customers were, what they were wanting to try on in store. And, you know, that's where that idea came from. And it's just been growing season after season.
I wanted to move now really on to some of your future goals. So I read 95% goal for natural and sustainable fabrics by 2022. And for you to be working towards greater transparency in where your fabrics are coming from, how do you achieve this as a small brand when a lot of the fabric is made overseas?
Yeah, I mean, a fabric manufacturing overseas and the size of the business we are is challenging, particularly on the sourcing front, and particularly more so with, you know, with the COVID shutdown, etc. I think our design team are really considered in how they select their fabrics. You know, obviously they have the goal in mind. And I think, you know, this spring summer that we've just had, we got to about 88%, I think, up from 66% the previous year. So they're, you know, they're definitely moving in the right direction. And it's just really considering that. I think the transparency is probably the most difficult area. You know, it's quite challenging to get past that initial contact, whether it's your fabric mill or the supplier that you're dealing with, to be able to really, I suppose, get them on board with understanding why you want this information, why you want to know, you know, where it was dyed, who it was dyed by, what was used in the dyes, what happened to the dye waste, etc. You know, it's really quite, I suppose, challenging for them also to understand, and they're not used to being asked these questions or having to provide any sort of certification or, you know, proof that what they're telling you is actually true. I think, you know, one example for us is a linen that we run constantly. The supplier had always said, oh, yes, it's European linen. But actually trying to get any verification for that was really quite difficult. We have managed to get there, I'm pleased to say, and we have the certification, et cetera, that we needed. But that was quite a long process to get there, and, you know, a lot of questions, a lot of time with the person that we deal with explaining what we wanted and why we wanted it and why it was important. And then, you know, then they then have to go and have that same conversation with whoever their contact is in, you know, in the next part of the supply chain, and that, you know, that conversation keeps going down the supply chain as far as you can. It's certainly the most challenging area within the fabric sourcing, and making sure that, you know, we are, you know, we're responsible in that way also.
And what do you think is the biggest key to that? Do you, you know, is it trust? Is it the fact that you've got long-standing relations with these suppliers? What's the key to it all for them to feel confident in being transparent to you?
I think it's certainly the relationships. They definitely help. The suppliers are willing to be more open. It's not that they're hiding anything. It's just that they're more willing to give you the full picture and you get a better understanding, and then you can ask better questions as well to be able to get the answers that you need. And, you know, I think the more and more brands and people who keep asking the same questions, you know, we're small, we're tiny compared to some of the brands out there. You know, we don't have the same leverage that some of them would have to be able to get those answers and really, you know, drill down. But, you know, we also took the view of, let's look at the items that we use the most of. Let's look at what we run every season, and let's target those fabrics and see what we can do there to really, you know, make sure that we can get as much information as we can, and then we can use that information to really take, if there's things in there that perhaps worry us or we're not sure about or we can't get certification for, then, you know, let's target that as an area that we can work on and improve on, and then move forward that way rather than trying to do everything at once.
And I know seeing suppliers face to face is really important to you. I want to touch on COVID and how this kind of helped and hindered working with your suppliers, and also in terms of sustainability.
Yeah, I think from my point of view, the supply base is obviously key to almost everything that we want to do. Without the supply base, we really don't have a brand. So they, you know, they really are super important. And, you know, like you said, Joe, normally we would be visiting them. We'd be visiting them probably twice a year, and each time getting a better understanding of each other and, you know, what we're trying to achieve. I think COVID has certainly highlighted that how important those relationships are, but also those suppliers are. And, you know, that it's again, it's a level of trust, you know, when everything's turning upside down from their side and from our side, you know, just being able to know that they're doing the best that they can and that we'll do the best for them is, you know, what makes that relationship really, really strong, and that we'll both come out the other side after all this time and you know, still be working together and still be successful. I think COVID also made us really laser focused on what we were buying, who we're buying it from, and really cemented, I suppose, our ideals and what we wanted. You know, we really had to consider what was important to the brand, both from a product but also a responsibility point of view, and really focus on, you know, those key things to take the brand forward and have you know, they have that strong identity as a brand, but also know who we are and what we stand for, you know, because I think, you know, that's what will take us into the future.
Definitely, Emma. And I'm smiling at that because I think there's a lot of fashion brands who don't know who they are. And each season, you know, there's a change of leadership or there's a change of direction. And that's why, you know, I really wanted you on today, because again, you know, I come back to leadership, but it's having a really strong idea of what a brand is and how you want to shape it. And I think that's quite unique, especially sometimes also with smaller brands, because there's that need to try and chase profit, you know, find your area within the business. So again, I just think it's credit to what you built there, that you have really stuck to your beliefs and your passion for actually wanting to be responsible for all the impact that this brand creates. We've talked about what you're doing so far. I now want to talk about the future. And what do you think the future is for Neek, and what other initiatives do you have coming?
Well, we have a lot. I suppose there's just so much that can be done. And, you know, it's really for us, just as part of our strategy, identifying those that we think are going to give the most value. So we have one of the recent ones that we're about to launch in another month's time is around care labeling. So focusing on, again, how we can get a longer life out of the garments, and our customers can get a longer life out of our garments. We now, our care labeling is being revamped and has more care instructions. We have things like spare buttons and a small skein of wool is now attached to the care label, sewn onto the care label, no plastic, so that customers are able to, put a button back on, or if they lose a button, they've got a spare button, or if there's a small hole in their knitwear, they're able to sort of stitch it and make sure that, it just doesn't get pushed to the side and discarded. So, and we've also promoted our Renique program on the care label as well, to remind customers again that, the life of the garment doesn't need to end when they've finished with it as such. So that's sort of one part of it, and there'll be other initiatives around that as well, with mending kits and that sort of thing also, to help push that with our customers and keep talking to our customers about how they can get longevity out of their garments. Almost on the complete flip side to that, looking at NFTs and digital fashion, is something that we're also looking at. It's something really exciting, both from a collaboration point of view, but what a sustainability point of view. I think, there's so many exciting parts to this digital fashion, and the technology seems to be rolling out super quickly. And again, we're potentially working with other partners to have that, I suppose, ability to sell both the physical and the digital elements that we have separately and together, and then also look at, pure digital fashion also, all really exciting areas.
Hugely exciting. And, we've been talking a lot over the past few episodes about this idea of the digital and the much more traditional areas of the industry coming together, this idea of, combining crafts with, almost NFTs. And I think it is brands that actually understand the holistic view of all the things that you can do to help your product become circular, who are going to really be the leaders in this area. And again, I see so much of that within what you're doing. Before I pass on to the other ladies to ask you questions, I just wanted to also talk about how you get that feedback from your customer. Throughout this, you've talked about a lot of the initiatives came from customer feedback. How do you collect that practically?
Yeah, so our store teams are feeding back to us constantly. So whether that's through an end of day email where they talk about what their customers were looking for, perhaps if we didn't have what they wanted, or how their customer was working with our product, how they styled it, and what they ended up purchasing as an outfit or as an item. So we get that from every store. We get that feedback, and Nadia and myself religiously read those emails the next day and see what that customer feedback and then after time, you obviously build up a picture, or you start to see repetitive actions sort of coming from that. And we are, as a small brand, we are able to be really quite reactive to that feedback. We also encourage our store staff, our managers, etc., to feedback as much as possible. We really believe that everybody's got great ideas, and the brand will only be stronger from myself and Nadia listening to all those ideas.
I love that. I love the fact that, the communication, the collaboration is just throughout the brand, because, also in fashion brands, it can be very top down, and I love the idea that actually, you rely on the feedback of, your store staff to build this brand and make it better. I now want to pass over to Emma to ask some questions.
Yes. Hi, Emma. It's been really, really interesting hearing you and hearing all about the brand. And I'm curious to know what the fashion industry looks like in Australia at the moment, given the pandemic. Has it you know, because I've lived in Southeast Asia for the last 14 years, but have recently moved back to the UK. So I've seen a lot of what the pandemic has done to, you know, the manufacturing hubs in the region. And I'm just curious to know if, like, because there is manufacturing in Australia, whether brands have kind of taken their manufacturing onshore as opposed to offshore, and, you know, just in general, what the industry looks like there at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. And I think, you know, in some respects, different areas of Australia are different. Here in Melbourne, I think we had the second longest lockdown in the world. So, you know, we had a really long period of time where stores were closed. In New South Wales, the sort of the biggest state in Australia, they had a 10 or 12 week lockdown. And the rest of Australia has managed to escape lockdown. So, I mean, depending on where you had your stores and how long they've been closed for is sort of, and how well you've managed your stock levels, I think, is the other thing, is really telling in the marketplace now, particularly at a retail level. From a manufacturing point of view, I think lots of brands certainly looked, and us included, looked at onshoring more product. I think especially as you know, freights have increased probably 25%, you know, when you're shipping from China or other places in Asia. And then, you know, with lead times you know, becoming longer and longer as well, that, you know, air freight has become not really an option. So I think there's so many things at play, but for us in particular, and I think a lot of people in the market, the way of working from a local perspective, as far as, you know, just your team set up, and whether it's pattern making or other people that you need in your business to be able to do that, is quite cost prohibitive. And then the manufacturing that's available, what's left in Australia now, is quite small. So certainly from our point of view, and I suppose the relationships that we have with the suppliers that we do have in Asia, it certainly felt to us that we needed to, I suppose, stick with what we know, but also those people that we have the trust in, and they have the trust in us as well, from, you know, the fact that the business will be there next season and the season after that. Yeah, you know, like you said, I think it has caused a lot of people to look and see what potentially other options are, and perhaps not have all your eggs in one basket.
Definitely. Hi, Emma. My goodness, it's been a pleasure listening to you. I have more compliments than questions, and I'm looking at your product on your website, and I understand why they're worth, you know, trying on rentals, falling in love with them, taking care of them, and giving them second lives, and making sure they stay with you as long as they can. And what I do like is that you are tackling consumer behavior with your care labels that you mentioned. So you are making it much easier for the consumer to have this, you know, connection between them and their product, and have this, you know, it's worth keeping on to. Oh, I can fix it. It's a very quick fix. People love convenience, and that's why, you know, fast fashion blew up like it did, because it was so convenient price-wise, and, you know, everything. They just made it so easy. And you are taking a very holistic approach to what could be convenient in the future, both environmentally and ethically. And I love that about your product. I was like, woohoo, like, you know, seeing beautiful stars when you mentioned it. I was like, yes. So my question to you is, with your brand and your business, you've created this sustainable, almost cradle to cradle perfectly blueprint. Will you be willing to share that blueprint with other brands that are desperately trying to be sustainable and create that cradle to cradle approach, but they don't know where to start? Is that an option? Is that something that you would think in the future, or would you say, we worked very hard on this and we'd like to keep this to ourselves so customers can come to us? Because I believe sustainability shouldn't be a choice to any fashion or textile brand. It should be a necessity to the blueprint of the business. I'm just really excited to hear your thoughts. And would you be, you know, as a business woman, would you be able to think it through and say, this blueprint is worth sharing with other brands so they can achieve what we've achieved in the sustainability aspect of the brand?
Yeah, I mean, overall, I think that sustainability and circularity is about sharing, and it is about collaboration. I think, you know, there's lots of things that we would still like to do with our Renique program, but either we don't have the knowledge or we don't have the resources. And so, again, you know, it comes back to that sharing what we're doing with other people, and then other people sharing with us what they're doing and how they're doing it, and tackling those issues. So, yeah, I think it's really important. I think, you know, traditionally fashion, you keep your cards close to your chest, you know, you're quite protective of what you're doing and how you do it. But I think when it comes to circularity and the sustainability side, you know, it's not really an option. You'll run out of steam quite quickly without that. And, you know, it's just one of the reasons why we have a lot of partners from outside as part of that program, bringing their knowledge and their skills, and, you know, us sharing from our point of view as well.
That's amazing. And I loved how you mentioned artisans rather than garment workers. And we're trying to sort of, you know, appreciate the craftsmanship that the people do behind the scenes of a brand, and giving them the credit that they deserve. And you did it so beautifully here today. I've just got many compliments. Just please, I admire your brand, and I admire what you're doing. And I hope people can use that blueprint, and we could see more brands, you know, really look into the little details and see how can we tackle sustainability here. And then all of a sudden you have this big picture and you're doing everything properly, environmental wise and ethical wise. Just thank you for being here. I'm so happy you're here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, I'd be really interested, any ideas you might have of like platforms and that sort of thing, and ways of working that would allow for that sharing also.
I just had another question, and I loved what you said about the holistic approach and developing relationships that lead to trust and open communications, because I think that's pivotal to every business, whether it's fashion or not. But in the times when travel's impossible because borders are closed, and there are other challenges in terms of resources and financial challenges for businesses, have you considered things like blockchain or any other technologies within the business to support that level of transparency and traceability at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we've looked at. I don't think, given, I suppose, the diversity of the Neek business, that it's something we've been able to see a way forward with at this stage. But I think, you know, certainly in the future, you know, I suppose we'll keep looking at opportunities and where that might be possible.
Thank you.
Thanks, Emma. Emma, it's lovely to meet a fellow Aussie on board here. And it's also great to sort of see an Australian fashion line sort of take ahead and sort of strive into the way and the path that you're doing. I grew up in Oz around when good old Stuart Membry was around in sort of the early 80s, and who's so iconic with his designs and so forth. But I was always, again, in the 80s, there was this big push of, you know, made in Australia and be proud of Australian clothing. And, you know, even though Australia's right on the other side of the world and often sort of forgotten about, it does have brilliant stances in terms of the work that people are doing within multiple sustainable sectors, and, you know, fashion is always been one of them. I am still sitting on the fence when it comes to rental, and I've got a question about what your thoughts are in rental, because I hear that it has been a success. Do you think that rental is only exacerbating the already issue of the clothing and the abundance of clothing that we have? reason being is that people will sort of go, oh, well, we can rent it, so it's fine that we can keep on producing. And I just sort of wanted to know whether what your thoughts are on that.
I think that, you know, if you take Black Friday, for example, there's been a lot of figures around that, you know, that a huge number of items, 80% of items bought will be discarded within 30 days of being. So, you know, for me, it's almost, well, why wouldn't you rent instead? You know, spend that money on rental. And then at least, you know, when you've finished with it in your 30 days, it goes back into the rental pool and someone else can then rent that item as opposed to purchasing. So, you know, that's sort of the angle that we're coming from is, you know, that you can still have that newness in your wardrobe. It's just that someone else is going to have that same collection in their wardrobe next month and someone else the month after. So that, you know, it is, you know, as opposed to buying something new every month and everybody's doing that, you know, it is sort of, you know, making use of that one time set of garments and making sure that, you know, it gets multiple uses as such. And, you know, for us at the end of the rental period and whether that garment after, you know, constant cleaning and wearing, et cetera, it then comes back into our Renique program as such and goes back through the normal process as the other garments that are returned.
Yeah, well, that's good because it's always the concern of I've heard of brands that are now making specific clothing lines just for rental. So they're not taking their abundance of clothing that they already have, but they're creating yet more just to rent. So it's nice to hear that you're turning those rental clothes back in and reusing and repurposing it. Any prospects of crossing the oceans and not just focusing on the Aussie market, but treading the boards and maybe hitting Europe at some point?
Yeah, certainly. I think it's in our strategy. I think, you know, it's our focus has very much been Australia the last few years and, you know, the size that we are. And I suppose the bandwidth that Nadia and I have has really meant, plus COVID has really meant focusing close to home. But I think when travel opens up again and, you know, people are looking to explore further than they are now, then that certainly is, you know, we see that as an opportunity where it fits our brand. I think it then becomes, I suppose, the end of life and of the garments, et cetera, then becomes a bit more challenging from that point of view. So that's, you know, that's certainly something we'd have to work through.
Yeah. I see also some of your dresses have got a Japanese names. What's the influence there, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I think it just comes from the Japanese minimalist feel. So, that, you know, the design team connect there and thus the garment names that they use have that influence also.
Yeah, because I really I would love to have a Hisako dress, actually. I'm sitting here dribbling at it. Yes, can I have one of these in green and also in teal and also in or the khaki colour that you do and also in black, please? It's, yeah, the clothing is...
We'll have to get you onto rental for that one.
Yeah, there again, that may be a bit tricky because good old Belgian Post is holding anything from Australia or anywhere else up to 3 to 4 weeks in customs. So I think it will be sat in customs by the time I get it to sort of worn, unfortunately. But beautiful, beautiful clothing and lovely designs. And it's been a real pleasure to meet you. And, you know, thanks, Joe, for inviting Emma on. So great to also connect.
Thank you. And thanks for all your questions.
I just want to thank you so much, Emma, because I think there is so much that our listeners can take away, not only from the initiatives that you are implementing in the brand, but also from a position of leadership, you know, to women who are really leading with integrity and leading with purpose. I think there's people who will really see you as role models, you know, the idea of collaboration and communication throughout that brand, you know, that everybody from the top through to, you know, store staff, every role within the business has such a key part in communicating what the customer wants, and that, you know, you take that into account when you drive your brand and the design vision forward. So thank you so much, Emma. Really appreciate it. We will put all the details to the website and all the initiatives in the show notes. And thanks so much for listening.
Thank you, guys, and have a good day.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this discussion. Please share this podcast with your friends or leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Also, make sure to follow us on LinkedIn. All the details are in the show notes.